and welcome to the football podcast that doesn't want to see its team pass out from the back and would much rather see their centre forward misjudge a long ball caught up in 40 mile an hour wind. It's the big man up top.
It's the big man up top. Oh, how are you, Joe?
Ed, it's been blustery this weekend, hasn't it?
It's been very windy, hasn't it?
Yeah. It makes for very entertaining football, don't you think?
Just adds chaos.
Yeah.
And that's what we all want in our football.
Absolutely.
Is just pure chaos. You know what, Joe? We're picking up the pace here.
Do you think?
This is episode 16,
goodness,
would you believe?
Me.
Who'd have thought we'd have even got past episode 4? But we're getting into our rhythm. We've had some lovely feedback from our listeners saying that they're loving the episodes, you know. And I think what I was going to say was, like Stockley Park during Man United Ipswich, we are on fire.
Wow. You were nervous about that comment, weren't you?
I was. It took me a good 10 minutes to write that out.
You said before we started recording, oh, I've got a little joke at the start. I'm nervous at all, fall flat, but I think it worked, Ed.
Just scraped by. Well, we're going to come on to the big stories, I think, very shortly. Obviously, the big one is City.
Massive.
We're going to talk a lot about City today. And of course, poor Steve Cooper.
Poor Steve.
Losing his job. He's, you know, he's a likeable guy, isn't he?
He is. Very strange. Strange all around, I think. And we'll come on to that. But yeah, second sacking of the season has just happened. And neither of them for teams in a relegation zone.
Who would have thought? Well, we're going to start with our trivia section, Joe. Bible ballers.
Yes, please.
How are you feeling? I've forgotten what score we're on. 6-4?
Something like that, yeah. I feel like I'm in a comfortable lead.
You are, yeah, whatever it is. We'll work out what the score is. But I've got a bit of a wordy one for you today.
Now, I don't want you to play any games this week.
No games.
No foreign variations.
No funny business. but it is a bit of a wordy question.
Okay.
So are you
I'll
ready?
I'll make some notes.
Okay. So, which Champions League and 5 times Premier League winner represented his country at Euro 2012 and Euro 2016 and was in the starting 11 for an infamous international match involving Le Hand of God?
Interesting. So that game, Le Hand of God, that was France against Ireland, wasn't it?
Maybe.
In a qualifier. 2012, 2016... That's a hard one, Ed.
Is it?
It's quite wordy.
It is quite.
I am actually going to need to make some notes. So, Ed, what happened in the EFL this week? I feel like you've become our EFL correspondent over the last few weeks.
Yeah, sort of accidentally, haven't I, really? But you know what? I'm all for it. I'm all
sure.
for it.
Yep.
I'm the man of the people, Joe.
Are you?
I'm the man of lower league football.
The common man, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm just the common man, exactly. Well, yeah, we'll go for a bit of an EFL roundup. We'll start in the Championship. Oxford 2, Middlesbrough 6. I've got to be honest,
wow.
This one immediately jumped out at me just because of the sheer number of goals in this
one.
A lot
of goals there.
An 8-goal thriller. Oxford actually went 1-0 up in this game, but in form, Borough went 2-1 up, and then 3-1 up from a very dodgy-looking lack of offside call, shall we say. Oxford then capitulated, complained about the 4th goal, which was hilarious. The striker was definitely onside, and the players all stopped for that one as well. Pretty shocking defending all round from Oxford, but Borough really in form and free scoring at the moment. That's their 15th goal in the last 3 games.
Wow.
Up to 5th, so doing quite well.
Yeah, very good. Michael Carrick in charge there, of course.
Yes, yes. We had Millwall 1, Sunderland 1 as well. This was a really interesting one. That Sunderland dominated, scored very early on in this one, but just couldn't extend their lead. They had a great chance with seconds left on the clock to make it 2-0 and wrap up the points. Harrison Jones was 1-on-1 and he fired a really tame shot at the keeper. And in very Deeney style, Millwall went straight back up the other end of the pitch and scored within 20 seconds. It was in the Sunderland net. But despite conceding that late equaliser, Sunderland went back to the top of the Championship, although only temporarily. But the big one, Joe, the big one,
yeah,
was Swansea-Leeds. Swansea 3, Leeds 4. And what I would say is the real Championship highlight of the weekend, a real ding-dong battle.
Sounds it. A thriller.
7-goal thriller in the flesh. This was the first game under new ownership for the Swans.
Okay.
Not quite new ownership, but a sort of new ownership structure. Swansea started really brightly, went ahead after 8 minutes. It was perfectly poised at 2 each when Leeds took the lead in the 73rd minute. Swansea then scored in the 90th minute thanks to Bianchini, only to concede a 4th goal a minute later from a strike from Wilfried Nonto. And I think this has been the thing with Leeds, is they've really struggled away from home of late, and that's kind of been derailing their promotion push. But this win puts them top of the championship on goal difference.
Can't argue with that.
Do we think Leeds are the kind of team we want to see in the Premier League?
I enjoyed them in the Premier League in their recent stint.
Yeah.
Though I do feel like a large part of that was Bielsa on his bucket. And I think he played very attractive football.
Well, Leeds are playing some very good football as well. They've just struggled a little bit away from home. Elsewhere, Luton were able to beat Hull to get themselves out of the bottom three. Sheffield United stuttered away at Coventry, only drawing 2 each. And Norwich continued their winless run with a 2-2 draw at West Brom. But the funny moment from the Championship, Joe, I'm not sure if you saw this, was Plymouth, who got a late equaliser at home to get a point against Watford. Very much needed point for the Green Army. But the amusing moment in this game came 8 minutes in. I don't know if you saw this, when Watford's Vakun Bio put the Hornets ahead. And there was just a really, really delayed reaction from the away fans. Just have a listen to this, Joe. And I'm going to tell you when the goal goes in.
Please do.
That's Jack Fatata again. And Bio is waiting in the middle, and he's forced it home. Watford have made their start count here.
And there they are.
A delayed reaction, but the Watford fans are way too well left. But Vakun Bio, right place, right time.
That's so bizarre.
It's very weird.
Why was it so long?
I have absolutely no idea. They were at the other end of the ground.
I mean, we've all been there when you can't quite see. But I'd say 2 seconds is long enough for a react. But that was so long.
It was really, really long. And what's really funny is that the goal was, it was sort of bundled home. So you can imagine, you know, it may be having a bit of a delay. But it's probably a good 3 seconds after Bio picks the ball up and runs away with it. So you're sort of thinking, what on earth has gone on there? So some kind of weird glitch in the matrix, I think.
Maybe it went through the side netting again.
Maybe. Goals galore in League One, Joe.
Yeah.
Wickham won 3-2 away at Lincoln. So they now find themselves 4 points clear of Wrexham with a game in hand. Wrexham in second won 3-0 at home to Exeter. There was a humorous moment in this game, I think it was from a corner, and there was an Exeter player stood holding the arm of the Wrexham goalkeeper, and somehow, even with an Exeter player holding him back, he managed to make a save, which was bizarre. Stockport in third also scored 3 goals with a comfortable away win at bottom of the table, Burton Albion. So all three of the top 3 teams scoring 3 goals. So yeah, goals galore in League One, and less so can be said about League Two. Walsall got an away win at Wimbledon that was 1-0, and then Doncaster and Notts County both played out 0-0 draws, so there was not a great deal going on. But again, you're thinking about the pitch conditions at this level and the wind and all that sort of stuff. Maybe that was a bit of a factor to play in that one. But the big one, of course, in League Two is Port Vale v Crewe.
The big one tonight as we record.
Do you want to make a prediction for the big fixture?
The A500 Derby.
Is that what they call it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm gonna say a 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be entertaining. I think it's gonna be feisty. It's a Monday night.
It's a Monday night under the lights.
Under the lights.
I think Vale are going to come away with a 1-0 win here.
Okay.
It's round the corner, Joe. We could probably go.
Let's go. Why not?
Let's do it. Probably sold out. But anyway, so that's your EFL roundup, Joe.
Thanks for that, Ed. Really enjoyed that. So in the Premier League, Ed, another big weekend.
Massive, wasn't it?
Oh, it's so good to be back, isn't it? And just here on in until March, it's just Premier League every single week.
Come on.
You can't ask for much more than that. Let's start at United.
Yes.
Or more accurately, Ipswich.
Right, yes. It was all very exciting, wasn't it, for a couple of minutes for United fans?
It was. I think you saw that Rashford goal go in and you thought, this is it. They're back.
Yeah.
And you saw players play out their skin at the start of that game. You know, you're trying to impress the new manager. It was all very exciting. And then the new shiny 3-4-3 formation.
I know.
Amorim, it was widely known that this is a formation that he was going to be using. And they were okay. I think no one was expecting fireworks straight away.
No.
But yeah, Ipswich looked great in this game.
We've talked about Ipswich before. They're sort of on the up, and it's been one of those things where they've struggled to get results when their performances have actually been quite good. And I think that was the thing with the United-Ipswich games. United went ahead very early, and it could have gone one way, and it really didn't, and that's to Ipswich's credit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think players like Liam Delap, Amari Hutchinson look very useful. Look like seasoned Premier League players.
They're really good. I spoke about us getting into our stride earlier, Joe. I think Ipswich really are. And you know what? It doesn't matter what form United are in. If you're a newly promoted side, getting a point against Man United, home or away, is a massive result. So let's see how they push on from here.
But I think especially in these circumstances, you know, there was so much hype around Amorim coming in.
Way too early to judge Amorim, obviously, just after one game. But I know you watched the Leicester-Chelsea game. What did you think of that?
Not the best game.
No, it was terrible, wasn't it?
It wasn't a great game. Obviously, Enzo Maresca going back to his former club last season. Chelsea looking good. I've said it a few times, Ed. I think they're up there.
Yeah, I thought they looked good without breaking sweat, really. And that'll be the key thing. How good were they, really? Because Leicester were very, very poor. And the fact that Steve Cooper got the sack after this, not hugely surprising. Leicester's lack of ideas, lack of energy, really just was, you know, on display for the world to see, wasn't it?
This has been quite a strange situation all around, this Steve Cooper situation. You know, he came into the club after Maresca left, and it wasn't the most popular appointment. Cooper has these ties to Nottingham Forest, who were probably Leicester's closest rivals geographically. He didn't get off to the best start already with Leicester fans. And he's not done that bad a job, I don't think. You know, they're 16th.
Yeah.
They've got a very different squad to when they were last in the Premier League. They're building something. I don't think he ever really stood a chance with his fan base.
No, and I think as well, you're talking about a team that have won the Premier League in recent memory, and that's always going to play a role in what happens, because the fans will be thinking, well, we want to go back there. Maybe if not win the league, you know, being up there in and around the Champions League, top six maybe, that's how a lot of fans will be thinking. And actually, just Leicester aren't that club in that position anymore.
They're not. And I wonder if there's some timing in. There's a lot of rumours around Ruud van Nistelrooy wanting to get straight back into management. Mm. So I wonder if there's a bit of timing there if we want to get him.
Quite possibly.
Graham Potter's been mentioned as well. And this got me thinking actually about when teams get new managers, I feel like you can either go one of two ways. You either choose a manager who embodies the style of play that you want, or you choose a manager that you think is going to work with the players that you have, don't you? And I think I was comparing Ruben Amorim's appointment to maybe Arne Slot's appointment or Fabian Hertzler at Brighton. They know the style of play he wants to play. They've seen what he can do at Sporting, and they're like, yes, we want that for United. But they don't necessarily have the squad to do it.
Yeah,
I don't think the United squad is going to look like this in a year's time. I think it's going to look very different.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if Amorim, obviously there's a load of strings attached with PSR and financial fair play. It's going to be interesting to see how much he can do in the transfer windows. But then you compare that to Arne Slot coming into Liverpool, Hertzler coming into Brighton. They've not made that many changes personnel-wise. The structures in those clubs have brought in a manager to work with their squad of players.
Mm.
Whereas it feels like at United, they're trying to start again. Yeah. Similar with Leicester, they brought in a manager that's proven in the Premier League, in quote marks, because he didn't do a great job at Forest. It's just interesting to see where these clubs go with their management.
Definitely. Managers. I think that's the thing with United. Everyone's in broad agreement that United do just need a big reset. They've got some great players there, but there's lots of sort of cultural issues at the clubs. And obviously, you know, with Steve Cooper leaving, we'll see which direction Leicester go in as well. Southampton, Liverpool, Joe, you obviously watched this rubbing your hands with glee, I imagine.
Well, I did. And actually, Liverpool were quite lucky to get a win here, I thought. Southampton played really well. But also, I think their fans must be so frustrated by the style of play. I think going into this game, Liverpool knew that the way they were going to win this game is to press them. Southampton play out from the back. Russell Martin doesn't move away from that philosophy. And you just knew that that is how Liverpool are going to score. And that's where the first goal came from. They pressed high and the keeper just played out a short one. And immediately they end up clearing it halfway down the field straight to a Liverpool player and he scores.
Yeah. At a certain point, they must be going, well, you know what? great, you want to try and play this particular way, but it is not working. We are going to get relegated if we play like this. And so we've got to have a plan B, and it might now be too late to action that plan
B. I think it is.
Every good leader has got to be adaptable, and there's got to be flexible to what the situation is around them. I kind of admired Russell Martin in the first sort of few weeks. Yeah. I'm starting to feel like he's the engineer of their own downfall there now.
Yeah, I think I agree. I just want to... a quick shout out to Paul Anuachu.
Oh, right, yes.
Are you familiar with his game?
I am now.
Now, he is Southampton's tall striker. They call him Tall Paul.
Solid name.
Which I really like. He played yesterday against Liverpool, and he had a really good game until he had to come off with an injury. But did you see? He picked up the ball in the midfield area, took on about five different players.
Yeah.
And then played a no-look pass out to the wing. This was a phenomenal moment.
And this is a guy who, he is a big man up top, 6'7".
Yeah.
Tall Paul, very much so. And what a little passage of play this is. So definitely have a look for it if you've not seen it. Phenomenal stuff.
So good.
So moving on to Arsenal. Fantastic Arsenal, I will say that.
Looked very good.
They looked very good, didn't they? What did you think of Arsenal winning 3-0 at home to Forest?
I thought it was very comfortable, wasn't it?
Mm.
Forest weren't great. I think we expected this to be a bit tighter than it turned out to be. They've had a good start to the season. But even Nuno said at the end, didn't he, that... let's not overanalyze this. Arsenal were a lot better than Forest in this game. And fair play.
I think the thing for me was that Arsenal looked very much like where we expected City to be this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the sense that they were stuttering a bit before the break. Obviously, City's was much more pronounced. But they've had a rest over the international break, had some key players back from injury, and they were just right back to their best. Yeah. It was like they'd never been away and basically felt like they won 3-0 without getting out of second gear.
100%. And it reminds me of what happened last season with Arsenal. They, at a similar time, they were stuttering a bit, not playing great. International break comes and Arteta takes them all to Dubai.
Yeah.
And they do some training out there in high humidity. And it made such a difference, and they went on to kick on. And I wonder if we're seeing a similar thing here.
Yeah, quite possibly. There were a couple of games that I thought would be worth touching on where teams that went down to 10 men, Joe.
Yes.
Bournemouth, Brighton. Tell us about what happened there.
Well, again, another entertaining game. Brighton won it 2-1 in the end. But Brighton had a player sent off for two yellow cards during this game, Carlos Baleba. Two quite soft yellow cards, I thought, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if both of them together warranted a red card, but that's the way the game is.
And a bit of late drama at the end. I love a goalie coming up for a corner, Joe.
Yeah. It's what you want to see.
It's what you want to see. Another game where a side was down to 10 men was Everton-Brentford.
Yes.
Now, Brentford had a man sent off in the 40th minute and managed to get a 0-0 draw away at Brentford, which I think is a really... good point for them.
Yeah.
But also, Everton should be capitalising on that. You can't go over a half with a man advantage and not break a team down.
No, especially considering Brentford's away form this year. I think you'd back Everton to go on and win that game, but they didn't. And then finally, Fulham against Wolves.
Yes.
This was a great game.
It was. A game particularly of great goals.
Great goals.
Particularly from Matthias Cunha. Mm. What a player he is, by the way, at the moment. I've put him in my fantasy team.
Oh, have you?
I certainly have, yeah. I thought Fulham started well, but Wolves really sort of grew into the game. But the thing that really interested me about this one was that Fulham, at the end, were down to 10 men of their own accord. They had made all their substitutions and then got an injury and had to take a man out. And I think if I've got this right, they were only 2-1 down at that point and ended up losing 4-1. I feel like nobody else has picked up on this, but I think if you're the manager, you've got to be holding your hands up there and saying, I got this majorly wrong.
It's a strange one, isn't it?
You know, you've got five substitutes. You should be able to put four on and leave one on until quite late so that it doesn't dramatically affect you. And then I think the last game, really, in the Premier League that we wanted to look at was the biggie, wasn't it?
Yeah, massive.
City,
massive game. This is one of those games, City against Spurs, where every goal that goes in for Spurs, you're just like, I can't believe what I'm watching here.
Yeah.
Like the first one, you're like, City are prone to conceding first. Like, this has happened quite a lot this season. But you think, especially 10 seconds into the game, Bissouma gets booked. You're like, City are on top of Spurs. You're like, this is going to be a rout. City are back, ready to go.
Here we go.
But then every Spurs goal that went in, I was just in disbelief. I couldn't believe it.
It's fair to say this wasn't in the script. We were all expecting, you know, international break, like I said, with Arsenal, having a bit of a rest. They'd had a few players back as well, Akanji and a couple of others. New contract for Pep. All felt like it had all the ingredients for City to go out and comfortably win 2-0 or something.
They even brought Rodri out for a little Ballon d'Or presentation.
Which feels like that was where it all started going wrong. But we had a voice note come in, Joe.
Oh, interesting.
From our colleague, Dave Tanner.
Lovely.
Do you want to hear it?
Please.
Let's see what he had to say.
Hey, Ed and Joe, it's UCB One presenter Dave Tanner here. I need some parenting football advice. So despite the fact I live in Nottingham, my boys, who are aged 8 and 5, are enthusiastic Man City fans. They've got the shirts, they love De Bruyne and Haaland, and my youngest has asked several times for a Phil Foden haircut, a request which I've ignored. Of course, in recent times, they've loved City's stunning run of success, lapping up trophies like fromage frais yogurts. However, in recent weeks, the glee has turned to shock and horror as their beloved team lose again and again and again. On Sunday, my youngest was on his knees, head in hands, as Spurs slotted away a fourth goal against the Champions. I can't help but laugh. Up until now, I've always rooted quite loudly against City and I've cheered on the opponent, whoever that might be. But now I've got to say, it's feeling a bit harsh. And I'm starting to feel a bit sorry for my kids. And I'm even starting to feel a bit sorry for Manchester City. They're not used to this degree of sporting adversity. So here's my question. Here's my dilemma. Should I stand in solidarity with my kids and get behind City? Or do I continue to enjoy watching them lose? Ed and Joe, I need your help with this. Thanks, chaps.
So the big question is, Joe, is as Dave said, should he stand in solidarity with his kids and get behind Man City? What do you think?
Absolutely not. I think it's time they learned a lesson,
I was going to say, part of me feels like all this is character building.
Absolutely. They've not had to go through any adversity.
No, exactly. And this is the first time, you know. It is difficult when you're a parent because as much as you try to influence who your children support, you don't have any control. And there is always that fear that one day they'll come back from school and they'll tell you, oh, I support X team, either a rival or just some random high-flying Premier League team. Dave's a Notts County fan. And yeah, his kids are supporting Man City.
Fair play.
I think it might be time for him to force Notts County onto his kids.
In the long term, this will do them good.
Yeah.
I would say.
What sort of adversity did you have to put up with as a young football fan?
I think I had the opposite experience of Dave and his children here. My dad obviously brought me up to be a Liverpool fan. He was a Liverpool fan in the 80s when times were good.
Yeah.
I started getting into football probably around 2004. I would have been 9 years old then.
Yeah.
And obviously, 2005 was quite a high point, but there were times around it when Liverpool weren't doing great, particularly afterwards when we had Roy Hodgson as a manager. And my dad would often, if we've watched a particularly turgid game or a big loss, he'd apologise to me and say, I'm so sorry that I've forced you into this. Obviously, I'm very grateful now to John.
Oh, yeah, it's great now, isn't it?
It's worked out for good. But I had to go through that, Ed. I had to experience the lows in order to enjoy the highs.
Well, this is it. And I remember a similar thing. I'm a little bit older than you, Joe. And I remember when I was younger and getting into football, it was Man United. It was Man United in the 90s. It was Cantona. It was Giggs. It was Keane. All that sort of stuff. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, United are a great team and all that sort of stuff. And then I got a little bit older, maybe towards, I don't know, 9 or 10. And that's when I remember my mother, who was a Stoke fan, or my whole family of Stoke fans, being like, right, we need to sort this out now. And the family very much forcing me to be a Stoke fan. And I remember a moment sat in my kitchen after we'd lost the equivalent now of a League One playoff semi-final for the third year running. And I remember just turning to my mother and saying, is this what it's like supporting Stoke? And she said, yes. And I just went,
I don't want it.
Well, I didn't. But then I just went, fine, okay. And I just accepted that it was just always going to be miserable. And so then we've had a few interesting times since then. But I think if you accept from day one that supporting your team is going to be miserable, then yeah, whatever success you get is always just a lovely Brucey bonus.
I think absolutely. But this is an interesting situation, isn't it? That obviously United were dominant in the 90s. But if you bring your kids into a situation where your team's just winning everything and then suddenly they lose five games in a row, how do they cope with it?
How do they cope? And actually, it brings us on quite nicely to chat a little bit more about City. Mm. Now, you're more of a Premier League aficionado than I am, Joe.
Sure.
So I'm going to ask you the question. What is going on with Man City?
Oh, if only we knew.
If only we knew.
I think it's a number of things. This was all set up for a big City win. I think the Guardiola contract is massive. I think that you'd expect that to spur them on. No pun intended.
Yeah.
I think a big issue in this game was quite clearly that Rodri wasn't playing.
Yeah.
I think Spurs cut through that midfield like a knife through butter.
But the thing is I agree, obviously Rodri's, you know, best player in the world officially, apparently. Mm. He's a great player.
Yeah.
But they have so many resources at their disposal. They shouldn't be one player off it all falling apart.
No, absolutely. I think the amount of money they have as well. But I think you look at the squad compared to a few years ago when they started this run of winning four titles in a row, their squad isn't that different.
Mm.
And I wonder if that's a bit of an issue in that they're aging.
Yeah.
Now, Kyle Walker is 34 years old. This shocked me. Jack Grealish is 30 years old.
Oh, goodness
me. You still think of him as like in his
early 20s,
to mid-20s,
yeah,
don't you? But actually, he's getting on a bit now.
Yeah.
John Stones is getting on a bit. So, yeah, I think that's an issue. I think it's an aging squad. It's a squad that's won everything. How do you get a squad that's won everything to go again constantly?
Do you think, you were talking about the aging squad there, do you think it's possible that because of the constant will Pep go, will he stay, oh, he's signed a contract for one more year, that maybe there hasn't been that sort of player succession planning that you would see at clubs where we know that the manager's going to be around for another 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
assuming everything goes well? But City have gone from season to season with Pep recently, haven't they?
Yeah, I do think that's a big factor. And I think obviously the elephant in the room in this situation is the 115 charges coming down the road. We're going to find out early 2025 what's going to happen there.
Yeah,
I'd be really surprised if they did get relegated, which there's been a lot of chat. I think it's very unlikely that that will happen. But at the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty there. We don't know where City are going to be in a couple of seasons' time.
Yeah.
So how do you succession plan for that? I don't know if you can.
And I think one of the things that will be discussed, even if they don't get relegated, is it's possible, for example, that they may get penalised in some other way and could have a huge effect on what they could spend because of financial fair play. So whatever happens, whether they get relegated from the Premier League or not, it's going to have a huge impact on them. So one piece of news that you may or may not have seen, Joe,
okay,
was the news about Swiss defender Sylvain Vallner. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did see this. Yeah, really interesting story, this.
Yeah, so for anyone who didn't, Sylvain Vallner is a really exciting up-and-coming Swiss defender. He's 22 years old. He's had a couple of promising seasons with FC Zurich, which is his hometown team. He won the Swiss League, actually, with Zurich, before earning a move to the Austrian Bundesliga, playing for FC Blau-Weiß Linz. But over the weekend, Sylvain released a statement through his club saying that he had decided to retire at the age of 22 to devote his Saturdays to Sabbath rest.
He is a member of the Seventh-day Adventist faith, which is like a Christian faith, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So for Seventh-day Adventists, Friday night to Saturday night Sabbath is really, really crucial, a 24-hour Sabbath period every week. And, well, this was the statement that was released on the Blau-Weiß Linz website. Sylvain Vallner has informed the club that for personal reasons, he no longer feels able to continue his active professional career as a footballer and would like to end it. For this reason, both sides have agreed to terminate his contract. They wished Sylvain Vallner all the best for the future. And he said in response that he would like to thank all those at the club, the entire staff and team. He would also just like to say a huge thank you to everyone who accompanied him during his career so far. And then he says this: I am a devout Christian and I read the Bible. I make my own decisions in life. I want to follow Jesus Christ, and the biblical day of rest has become really important to me. For me as a professional, this means from now on, I do not want to play football for a living on Saturdays. It is my personal conviction that I have come into in the last few days. So what do you make of that, Joe?
I think it's a real challenge, actually. And what's interesting, what's come out as well, is that he talks about he doesn't want to use the Sabbath for profit.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, we've talked about the differences between our faiths here, but I think this is such a challenge on... If I look at the way I practice Sabbath, I'm probably not that sacrificial. I go to church on a Sunday, and then maybe I will see friends after church. Maybe I'll do stuff. Maybe I'll watch football. Maybe I'll cook. Whereas, actually, we are taught to rest.
Yeah, I think sort of scripture tells us that Sabbath is a huge sacrifice, but it comes with huge benefits. In Mark chapter 2, Jesus said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, which is a really important distinction as well. He made it clear that actually the Sabbath is for us and for our benefit. And I think it very much comes under that thing of, well, for Sylvain Volner, he's decided that this is something that is so important to him. The thing I think which is amazing is just that thing of just him taking a stand and being so committed to his faith that he's decided he cannot let anything get in the way of it, even his purpose as a footballer, which, as we spoke about last week, is for footballers, it is pretty much everything.
Yeah, it's something that we all dream of, isn't it?
Yeah.
Growing up, we all dreamed that we're going to play football as a career. And for him, at the age of 22, this is what I love the most. He's 22, which is relatively young, isn't it, for a footballer. This is such a huge sacrifice for him to, like you say, stand up and say, no, as much as I love playing football, this is all I've ever wanted to do. My faith is more important. Yeah.
And there's a verse in Romans as well, Romans 12, that says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. And I think like this verse calls on people to be a living sacrifice, as it says, which means giving up what you want from life, choosing to serve God instead. And look, that's a huge sacrifice for all of us. And that's pretty much the core of our faith, really. But to have that conviction to say, I'm not going to do what I really want to do most in life because I trust in you, Jesus, is really quite inspiring, isn't it?
It is inspiring. I think, like you say there, the phrase... offer their bodies as a living sacrifice. We hear that phrase quite a lot, don't we? It's said in church, it's said in Christian circles quite a lot. Use me as a living sacrifice. When you think about those words, that's such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, how many areas of our lives are we actually saying, you know what, use me in this area. Let me sacrifice myself in this area for you, God.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, Sylvain Volner, well done. Okay, Joe, we're back to our Bible ballers. This is our trivia section. I'm going to read the question out for you again. Which Champions League and five times Premier League winner represented his country at Euro 2012 and Euro 2016 and was in a starting 11 for an infamous international match involving the hand of God? So you think you know what the hand of God reference is, don't you?
Yeah, I'm really puzzled by this question, actually, Ed.
Okay.
I think the hand of God, I think this was France against Ireland. I think it was Henri.
Yeah.
Handballed it. I remember him. He kind of tapped it in, kept it in play.
It was, yeah, that's very famous, very controversial.
It essentially knocked Ireland out of the qualifiers, wasn't it? Was it for the World Cup?
I think it was qualifiers for the World Cup in 2010.
I think it was 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we're talking a player that was playing in 2010, 2012 and 2016, starting lineup for that France-Ireland game. I think I might have it. Now, if Ireland were at 2012 and 2016, peak Ireland, five times Premier League winning team, so that's either Man City or Man United. I can't think of any current City players from Ireland. So I'm going to go for John O'Shea.
John O'Shea.
For Manchester United.
Is correct. Oh, well done, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Your logical reasoning was very good there.
Thank you so much. I had a lot of help there, Ed. No, I will admit that.
No, listen.
So actually, I said Ireland weren't in 2012 or 2016, and it was your face that gave it away.
Well, I have no poker face, Joe. Well done.
Thank you. I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, actually. I think just knowing that somebody was in that Ireland team for that game... and still coming up with it, I think is very impressive.
Thank you very much. I wouldn't have done that.
So well done. John O'Shea. He is the sixth most decorated Ireland player of all time. Over 100 caps for Ireland.
It's weird thinking of him as a five-time Premier League champion and a Champions
and
League.
And Champions League winner.
That's mad to me. Well, thank you very much for listening to The Big Man Up Top. If you want to get in touch with the show, ping us an email to podcasts@ucb.co.uk. Please follow, subscribe, and give us good reviews. Ed, how will I know when a new episode has come out?
Yeah, good question. So there's a new episode out every Tuesday. So if you're on UCB Player, keep an eye out on the Big Man Up Top feed. But also, if you're on your Spotify's, etc., make sure you hit that follow button.
Press that follow button. I was in church yesterday with someone telling them about the podcast, and they pressed follow right in front of me.
Well done. That's what we love to see.
Love to see that. A huge thank you to our producer, Anthony Salamat-Webb, for all his hard work behind the scenes, and there will be a new episode next Tuesday.
Apparently so.
See you next week.
See you later, Joe.